a part of it, a little projection left behind when the tunnel was excavated. "This is very old," he mused. He tapped his finger against the irregular angles all around the plinth. They looked to be miniature repetitions of the scars on the walls, tiny bite marks that had given the structure its shape. Sorgas stood back and stared up at the summit of the plinth. The roof of the passage was slightly vaulted, allowing the ugly statue to perch high above the floor. The herd chief did not like to look on the grisly carving. It embodied the worst aspects of Chigger and Flea, a huge insect with its many arms folded across its body and its long proboscis drooped across its chest. The thing's back legs were curled in reverse, jointed from behind. Two stubby horns protruded just over a set of multifaceted eyes. Immense mandibles stretched outwards from the statue's mouth.
"I cannot see if the statue is cut from the plinth or if it is a separate carving set atop it later," Sorgas said. "It seems to be fashioned from the same stone."
"Not matter for statues," Groth snapped. "Sorgas see the danger, Warherd smash."
"They could be what makes the light," Sorgas suggested. "Or they may serve another purpose. Did you not see them in your vision?"
"Groth not remember small things," the chieftain replied. He shifted the weight of the big axe he carried. "Groth only remember important things."
Sorgas waved his hands at the tunnel.
"Even small things may prove important," he advised. "It would be wise to tell me everything you saw in the flames."
An amused snort shook Groth's bestial frame.
"If Sorgas here, then not need Groth to show way."
Groth's humour faltered when he noticed something behind them, down the passageway. They had passed several of the plinths, and he could have sworn each of them had one of the horrible statues squatting at its top. One of the plinths was empty. There was nothing below it to indicate the statue had fallen. It was simply gone.
"We go,"
Groth barked at the other beastkin. He turned and stalked down the tunnel after Frang. He tried to keep an attitude of confident authority in his speech and manner, but he found his gaze constantly straying to the plinths as he approached them. He watched the bug-like statues, expecting to catch some hint of motion from them. Groth tried to keep Sorgas's warning from his mind, the caution that small things could be important. The beastkin reached the end of the strangely illuminated tunnel. Sorgas directed a last lingering look at the plinths and the weird statues atop them. After his display of bravado, Groth had been eager to quit the winding passage. He suspected that, for some reason, the insectile statues were a factor in that decision. The herd chief had taken a more than usual dislike to them. Try as he might, Sorgas was not able to figure out why. He finally decided to chalk it down to another of the beastman's primitive whims, the erratic choices that made him so difficult to anticipate or manipulate. The passageway opened into a wider chamber. Nexus was the best word Sorgas could find to describe the cavernous vault, for the openings of other passageways were everywhere. Some were at the same level as the one from which the war herd had emerged, and others were set higher on the walls, with little elevated ledges connecting them in irregular rings. A few exhibited the same eerie light as the tunnel they had left, and some others had the flicker of firelight glowing inside them. Most were dark, yawning mouths of blackness. Taking in the whole of the nexus, Sorgas found it recalled to him the honeycomb of an insect colony, and he thought again of the weird statues resting on the plinths. Groth prowled ahead of the other beastkin. He studied the passageways, peering intently into each opening. Frang loped along a few paces behind him, dutifully awaiting the command to strike out into one of the tunnels. The Ungors kept back, near Sorgas, less eager than the beast hound to plunge still deeper into the bowels of the mountain. They might have fealty to their herd chief, but it was not enough to entirely overcome their fear. At last, one of the passages attracted Groth's attention in full. The chieftain stalked back to its dark mouth and inspected it closely. Finally, he swung back around and called to Sorgas.
"Conjure light,"
he ordered, and waved the shaman over to him. Sorgas evoked a greenish sphere of witchlight and let it suffuse the head of his braystaff. In its weird glow, the rest of the nexus was thrown into uncanny detail. The walls here had the same chewed appearance as they had seen before. There were also more of the pedestals and the insects crouched on top of them.
"Does it look familiar?"
Sorgas asked as he brought the arcane light closer to the herd chief. Groth simply grunted and motioned him closer. Sorgas felt a notable rise in temperature as he stepped in front of the passageway, a hot breeze wafting from somewhere within. There was a bitter smell as well, a reek he could liken only by its faint similarity to a pool of bubbling pitch. With the witchlight to aid him, Groth scrutinized the tunnel, turning his horned head from one side to the other. When he was content that he had looked at it from every angle, he faced the other beastkin.
"This is way," he announced.
Sorgas glanced around at all the other passageways that opened into the nexus.
"Are you certain?" he asked.
Groth glared at the doubting shaman.
"This what Groth see," he told Sorgas. "This way to God Beast."
He pointed at Frang and waved his arm forwards. The beast hound hurried off down the passageway.
"Sorgas follow, or Sorgas stay?"
He bared his fangs, leaving no question of what it would mean if Sorgas did not obey.
"Your vision has led us this far," Sorgas said. "Your vision and my knowledge. It would be unwise to discard either when we are so close to your destiny."
The shaman smiled to see Groth's swagger falter. The herd chief was trying to tell himself that Sorgas was wrong and failing at the attempt. Finally, the chieftain turned back around.
"We go," he growled.
With his axe, he motioned Togra and Vulak to precede him into the tunnel. He stared expectantly at Sorgas until the shaman did the same.
"Should you not take the lead?" Sorgas asked. "It is you who knows the way, after all."
Groth replied with grim logic.
"Groth know much. Only Groth know."
He let the edge of his axe slide against the rock wall, the scraping sound echoing through the tunnel. Sorgas had to strain to hear the chieftain's words.
"Groth brave. Groth not fool. Not risk losing power now."
Sorgas peered more intently at the warriors ahead of them. The Ungors were cautiously advancing, and Frang was sniffing at the floor just where the witchlight's radius began to fail. Sorgas thought of the Trogoth and how Groth had anticipated the brute's ambush.
"We are going to be attacked?"
"Groth brave, not fool,"
the herd chief replied.
"See others in vision. Many things hunt inside mountain."
The shaman nodded in agreement. They had all seen the ghostly images caught in the walls at the entrance and the motley variety of bones in the Trogoth's lair. It would be foolish to think no one had got past the two menaces as they had, or that there were no other ways to get inside a mountain as gigantic as Beastgrave. There was one other thought that nagged at Sorgas.
Perhaps you have seen enemies ahead of us, he said. But what of enemies behind us? Did your vision show if we are being followed?
Sorgas saw the uncertainty his question provoked. When Groth answered, there was hesitation in his tone.
Groth see none follow.
Sorgas knew from Groth's glower that he would gain nothing by pressing him further. He had something of an answer, at any rate. The hesitation in Groth's voice told him that there were deficiencies in the prophetic vision, that not everything within Beastgrave was as he had expected to find it. The shaman's question had placed a new worry in Groth's mind. Might one of those gaps be an enemy stalking their trail? Because he had seen no such foe, could he be certain one did not exist? The shaman had his own worries in the same vein. He was not forgetting the magic that had freed Groth, and he was not so arrogant of his own abilities to discount the chance that whoever the wizard was, they could have slipped past his trap in the tunnel. Let Groth keep his attention on the path ahead. Sorgas was going to keep one eye on the trail the beastkin left behind. The heat in the tunnel steadily increased as the beastkin pressed onwards. Groth's mouth hung open as he tried to cool off. He noted with annoyance that Sorgas was sweating, another of the turnskin's human traits. He kept sniffing the air, but aside from the scents of the other beastkin, there was only the strong burning smell. Groth knew what that smell belonged to. He had seen it in his vision. Briefly, he thought about telling Sorgas, but decided against it. If the shaman was so wise, he could figure it out for himself. The tunnel was much like the one that had opened into the Nexus. Groth still found himself giving the ugly statues careful scrutiny. None of them moved while he was looking at them, at least, but he remained convinced they could do so. The idea of pulling one of them down and taking a closer look at it was terrifying, for no reason he could explain even to himself. Marks in the dirt along the passageway took Groth's mind away from the insectile statues. He noted the long, thin footprints of Grots. There were bigger tracks that resembled those of a human wearing shoes, but sunk to such a depth and were of such size that he reasoned the man was very large and clad in armour. He found the prints of panthers and tracks even bigger and deeper than those of the armoured warrior. The tracks of wolves made him lift his head and sniff at the air again. He cocked his head to one side and listened intently for a stray sound. Frang, loping along at the front of their group, had a far sharper nose than any of them. Groth knew the beasthound would detect any odd scent before he could. But would the animalistic Frang know how to interpret what it smelled? That was the riddle that kept the herd chief alert. Several times the beastmen stopped and waited for their herd chief. Side branches were the reason for these pauses, Groth's warriors awaiting his decision on which tunnel they should follow. Always he made a careful inspection, matching the evidence of his eyes to the images in his mind. When he was satisfied, only then did he motion the group to proceed along the course he chose. At last, with the heat grown towards the nigh intolerable, Groth's war herd reached the landmark he had been expecting them to find. A mephitic odour slammed into them as they emerged from the tunnel into a tremendous chamber. There was no need here for the shaman's witchlight, and Sorgas dispelled the glow. All the illumination the beastkin could want was provided by a hellish red pulse that cast its rays across them. The chamber they had emerged into was a great chimney soaring far into the lofty heights of Beastgrave. The ledge they stood upon fell away after a few yards, plunging down into the depths far below. Against one side of the chimney was the cause of the pulsating crimson light. a fiery cataract that slithered up through the mountain, and a river of molten magma that bubbled and churned as it crawled up the wall in defiance of the rule of gravity. While the river itself was suspended in its impossible course, as it seethed, it threw off blazing fragments that hurtled downwards in a steady drizzle of fire. When the fragments struck solid rock, gouts of smoke billowed away.
"Where do we go from here?"
Sorgas asked Groth. The herd chief stepped away from the ledge and cast his gaze across the chimney. Scores of other tunnels were opening into the flume. Some of these were joined by causeways and bridges, spans of rock that stretched across the black depths. His interest was in a tunnel at roughly the same level as the one from which they had emerged.
There is path,
Groth said, and pointed his axe at the tunnel. The shaman scowled.
There is no bridge here. We will have to go back and find a higher approach if we would cross here.
Groth fixed Sorgas with a scowl of his own.
Sorgas say, great shaman. Sorgas say, gods listen to Sorgas.
He pointed up at a distant span. The chimney was wider there than it was at their own level, and the bridge was an enormous mass of stone.
We not find bridge. Sorgas bring bridge here.
Sorgas blinked in dismay at what the herd chief was asking of him.
I cannot snap my fingers and bring the bridge down here, he protested. There are limits to magic. One does not test the favor of the gods.
Before Sorgas could react, Groth seized him by the neck. He spun around and held the shaman over the edge.
Groth strong,
he boasted, jostling Sorgas with the single hand that had hold of him. His voice dropped to a hiss.
How long, Groth, be strong?
The shaman clenched his eyes tight, and strange words tumbled across his fangs. Groth felt the air turn cold around him as Sorgas hastily conjured a spell. He was sure that whatever enchantment the turnskin was making, it would not be anything targeted against him. It would take far mightier magic than he had yet seen from Sorgas to strike the herd chief before he could drop the shaman into the pit. A crackle of energy suddenly leapt from the bray staff. Like a flash of lightning, it streaked upwards to slash into the span. The energy sheared through the rock that anchored the bridge at one side. As its foundation crumbled away, the arch snapped free from the other end. Tons of stone were sent hurtling downwards. The smaller bridges in its path were obliterated, smashed to rubble as the plummeting hulk swept through them.
Back to tunnel,
Groth shouted at the beastkin. He flung Sorgas into the passageway, hurrying after the shaman. He was barely within its protection when the avalanche came roaring down. Clouds of dust rushed into the tunnel while a violent tremor shook the mountain. There was a deafening clamor, a grinding cacophony that shivered through the herd chief's bones. The monstrous quake was over in a moment. Only faint echoes of rocks bouncing off walls reached Groth's ears. He did not wait for the dust to completely settle. Clenching his axe in both hands, he marched out from the passageway. The ledge on which he had stood before was gone. In its place was a mass of twisted stone that reached across the pit to the tunnel on the other side. Narrower at this point than it was higher up, the chimney's walls had stopped the bridge as it fell, pressing it tightly in its new position, the position in which Groth had seen it in his vision. Sorgas crept forwards and joined Groth at the mouth of the passageway. He was filled with awe, and his body trembled at the magnitude of what his magic had done.
Now cross, Groth told him. Sorgas magic do this. Bring bridge where Groth want.
The shaman leaned on his staff and continued to shake. The charms and talismans clattered against his horns. Groth drew a deep breath. He could smell the weakness in Sorgas's scent. The shaman had told the truth about the limits to his magic, the source of all that made him strong. Sorgas would need time to recover from this feat. Right now, he was good for little.
Vulak! Groth barked.
He pointed at the fallen bridge when the Ungor emerged from the passageway.
Cross, he ordered. Find if bridge strong or weak. Vulak fall,
the Ungor objected. Groth's fur bristled with aggravation.
Vulak fall here, or Vulak fall from bridge.
He stepped towards the Ungor.
Vulak choose.
The Ungor circled around Groth and stepped out onto the bridge. Carefully, he picked his way across the span. As Vulak moved, bits of rock were dislodged and sent careening into the pit. Each time, he froze and glanced back. Groth and the other beastkin spectated from the mouth of the passage. Togra was especially attentive to Vulak's progress. The scout was very aware that if the other Ungor fell, it would be his turn next. When Vulak finally picked his way to the other side and was framed in the dark opening of the far tunnel, Groth called to him to wait. Now that he was convinced the bridge would hold, he waved the rest of his war herd across. He was relieved when they were all on the other side. Groth would need every warrior he had for what was ahead of them. Fatigue dragged at every muscle in Sorgas's body as he marched down the darkened tunnel. He was almost grateful Groth had not demanded he renew the witchlight after they left the chimney. As tired as he was, even such a minor conjuration felt like it would be beyond his ability. The beastmen had fashioned crude torches from strips of the shaman's cloak and blobs of burning stone cast down by the magma streams. He was too weary to question the weird way the fiery stone simply smouldered when wrapped in cloth, while it reacted with caustic violence when splashed against the rock walls of the chimney. Sorgas decided it was simply another of the uncanny mysteries that permeated Beastgrave. The corridor they followed was markedly different from the strange passageways with their chewed walls and weird statues. Here they were surrounded by a rough, porous rock that had a yellowish cast to it. The ceiling was low and uneven, forcing Groth to crouch down at several points and causing Sorgas to hold his staff at an awkward angle as he trudged along. Little trickles of water dripped down from the roof, turning the floor into an unpleasant mash of dirt and dust. The shaman could make no sense of the disordered prints caught there, but he knew that something had used this tunnel in the past. Gradually, the burnt smell from the chimney lessened, and the air began to lose its heat. Sorgas saw Frang stop ahead, the beast hound's snout raised as it snuffled. It was not long before the creature was moving again, the Ungors following a bit behind it. Sorgas was next in line, but when he reached the spot where Frang had stopped, he could discern nothing that explained its interest.
Frang smell new smell,
Groth told Sorgas. The gore sucked a deep breath into his lungs. He grinned at the shaman.
Sorgas not find smell?
He motioned him onwards, regardless of what he did or did not understand. It was many minutes before Sorgas detected the odour that Groth was speaking of. A raw, heady smell, that of soil, kicked up from below the surface. There was more, a rich scent of roots and tubers. There was a wary and expectant attitude about the herd chief, something not explained by these smells on their own. What else was it Groth expected them to find? The beastkin entered a wide grotto-like cavity. The ceiling here was dozens of feet high, and from it descended a wild variety of roots. Clumps of soil clung to the largest of them, and the floor itself was heaped with black mounds of earth. Little fingers of daylight filtered down along with the roots, strange to see after the peculiar glows and flickers the beastkin had experienced.
"We must be near to the surface," Sorghast told Groth.
The herd chief didn't seem to pay him any attention. There was an unaccountable intensity about Groth as he slowly marched into the grotto. His eyes kept roving around the room. His hands gripped the Duardin axe with such an excess of anticipation that Sorghast saw the haft bending. The shaman was certain that Groth had seen this chamber in his vision. More than that, he knew what they could expect from this place. Sorghast matched the herd chief's wariness, his gaze prying into every corner and cranny. He looked up at the ledges which circled the room, but could find no hint of a cave or tunnel. Then he happened upon one of the earthen mounds. Clear in the loose soil was the print of a huge wolf. Before Sorghast could draw Groth's attention to his find, Frang snarled. The beast hound was near the far end of the grotto, where the mouth of another passageway gaped. Togra and Vulak started forwards to see what Frang had found, but Groth stayed where he was. Sorghast was convinced the herd chief already knew what was coming. Frang scrambled back into the grotto. Where it had been standing, an arrow struck the floor and went spinning away. More arrows came streaking out from the darkened tunnel. In response, the two Ungors hurried into cover. The howls of wolves thundered through the grotto as three grey-furred animals charged out from the tunnel. The huge creatures had saddles strapped to their backs, and each of them carried a wiry rider. These were lean, wizened beings with hairless green skins. They wore rough jerkins of fur and leather with wooden quivers slung across their backs. An assortment of leather caps and metal helms covered their heads, but the faces beneath were all of similar cast, pinched and hungry, with beady little eyes and long, sharp noses above a fanged giggle of a mouth. Sorghast knew the horrible archers to be Grots, a malicious greenskin breed that infested many places in Gur. He knew something else. If there was one thing a Grot shunned, it was a fair fight.
Groth, this is only a distraction. The real attack...
Even as the shaman was speaking, the earthen mound where he had spotted the track exploded outwards. From the loose earth, an enormous wolf sprang at him, the canine's jaws stretched wide. A Grot scurried out from the same concealment, spitting dirt while charging at Sorghast with a spiked mace. Before either of the hidden foes could reach Sorghast, Groth intercepted them. The Duardin double-headed axe flashed out and hit the wolf in mid-leap. The animal spun through the air, its ribs cracked and one foreleg shorn entirely. The Grot beside it froze in shock, spattered with the wolf's blood. Still spitting dirt, it tried to blink the gore from its face while it turned and fled. Other ambushers emerged from the piles of earth. Two more wolves and an equal number of Grots. Rather than plunging straight for the beastkin, these attackers swung up into the saddles on their steeds before trying to confront the war herd. Groth charged one of the wolf riders as the Grot reached its saddle. The savage steed lunged for the herd chief and snapped at him with its fangs. The gore twisted away, and the wolf's teeth only caught a bit of fur. The huge axe in Groth's hands took a far more vicious toll on the Grot in the saddle. The greenskin shrieked as it crashed down into its fur cap. With the chieftain's brawn behind the blow, the blade cleaved through the rider's skull and to its waist. The butchered Grot sagged obscenely against the wolf's hindquarters as the animal darted onwards. Sorghast did not have the liberty to watch Groth and the now riderless wolf. The other hidden wolf rider was bolting towards him, intent on easier prey than the furious chieftain. The shaman managed to throw himself aside as the canine leapt at him. Its claws raked across his cloak, and the scimitar carried by its rider, cracked against the head of his bray staff. Sorgas scrambled away from his attacker as the wolf turned and made another rush at him. The animal's fangs snapped at his leg while the grot took a swing at his head. More from panic than skill, the shaman spun the bray staff around. Again he blocked the grot's blow with the head of his staff. The butt end he brought cracking down on the wolf's head. The animal whimpered and stumbled away. Dazed, it resisted the frantic efforts of the grot to get back into the fray. Sorgas ripped one of the talismans from his nasal horn and held it aloft in a clenched fist. He shouted at the grot, hurling at him a tirade of arcane gibberish. Visibly shaken, it redoubled its efforts to get the wolf moving, fumbling desperately at the belt which kept it in the saddle. Sorgas took a step towards the panicked greenskin and threw the talisman at it. A squeal of absolute terror sprang out. Desperate, the grot stabbed the tip of its scimitar into the wolf's flank to snap the canine from its daze. The animal snarled in anger and swung its body around to try to bite whatever had struck it. The reaction only made the grot more frantic, and it chopped the edge of its scimitar against the wolf's head, severing its ear. Utterly enraged, the wolf dropped to the ground and rolled onto its back. It shifted back and forth, grinding the trapped grot against the floor. When the grot's shrieks stopped, the wolf rose to its feet and pulled the dead rider off its back. The green skin hanging from its jaws, the animal quickly trotted away. Sorgas limped forwards and recovered the talisman from the floor. The sounds of battle were fading. He looked across the grotto as one of the grot archers went riding back down the tunnel. A riderless wolf hurried after, a big gash running down the animal's flank. The rest of the wolves and grots were dead. Vulak was prying a dead grot from his axe, while Togra was scavenging arrows from the corpse of another. Frang had its jaws locked around the throat of a dead wolf, stubbornly worrying the carcass from side to side. An agonized yelp rang out from behind him. Sorgas turned to see Groth standing over the body of the last wolf. The herd chief pulled a bit of bloodied flesh off his axe. He sniffed it warily and tossed it aside.
"Bad eat, Grots," Groth stated. "Wolves, same. Smell of mushrooms. Bad eat."
Sorgas nodded at the statement. His magic would make him immune to the risk, but for the other beastkin, it would be best to defer to Groth. Grots were known to eat many things that would poison anything else. Perhaps they had conditioned their mounts to do the same.
"The other attackers have fled," Sorgas told Groth. "It does not look like we suffered any casualties. Your anticipation of the ambush made the difference. Now, if you had..."
Groth looked away before Sorgas could make another appeal to him about disclosing all the details of his vision. The herd chief turned to Frang and ordered the beast hound to leave the wolf carcass alone.
"Fight not over," Groth told Sorgas. "More enemy come."
He gestured with his axe at the far tunnel and up at the ledges.
"Fight here, better here."
It was as much information as the herd chief was going to give him. Slinging his axe over his shoulder, Groth marched off to give orders to the other beastkin. Sorgas resisted the urge to rush after Groth. There were things he needed to know, such as what kind of enemies the herd chief knew were coming, and how long they had to prepare for them. He knew it would do no good to ask. Groth was capricious enough to keep such details from the shaman simply because he did ask. Chapter 11. The trail left by Groth led the Sylvaneth through the winding passageways. Nias had recovered enough from the vampire's bite that Kyra was comfortable letting her take the lead again, more comfortable than letting Ishia guide them through the mountain. Nias's capabilities were founded on skill and experience, things that could be quantified. Ishia's sudden affinity was more mysterious. Even she was troubled by the uncanny impressions that came to her. As they moved through the tunnels, Ishia stopped and directed Kyra's attention to the stone plinths that jutted from the walls and the evil-looking statues that squatted on top of them.
"They dwelt in Beastgrave in another age," she confided to the branch wraith. "Long before the Quickblood and the Sylvaneth first came to the mountain, perhaps in another age they shall dwell here again."
The young dryad shook her head. Kyra felt the fear and confusion rife within her essence.
I do not know why I said that," she apologized.
Yanir gave Ishia a wary look.
"I wish you hadn't," she said. "We have enough to worry about without wondering about these statues."
Kyra shifted her attention between the plinth and Ishia.
"It is Beastgrave," she told Ishia.
She pointed to the amber arm.
"When you were saved from the mountain's hunger, a bit of it melded with your spirit as well as your body."
"What can I do?"
Ishia implored.
"Remain who you are," Kyra said. "When we passed through the forest on Beastgrave's slopes, I felt a malicious presence. When I tried to draw upon my magic and connect with the trees, I felt that presence rushing into me, trying to smother me in its malevolence. I thought it was the awful spirit of the forest, but I think it was Beastgrave itself. There is an awareness within the mountain, a force as alive as the Thornwild, only vicious and dark. But it can be fought. If you resist, you can fend it off, keep it from polluting your essence."
Kyra gestured at the statue on the plinth.
"When the mountain whispers to you, be resolute. Do not let it drown your spirit. If it seeks to flood you with its presence, you have to hold it back. Control the flow. Preserve who you are."
Ishia bowed.
"I will try," she said. "I will not forget why I am here and what I must do."
She raised her eyes to look up at the statues.
"Perhaps that is what happened to them. Perhaps they lost so much of themselves to Beastgrave that finally there was nothing left and they became part of the mountain."
"We will not stay here that long,"
Yanir vowed.
"We will find the root cutter, pluck his head from his shoulders, and destroy the relic he is hunting. A simple task. We will be gone from Beastgrave long before it can do more than whisper to you."
The old dryad's reassuring words rang hollow in the twisted tunnel. The walls echoed Yanir's voice, distorting their meaning into something rife with menace. Kyra was certain the effect was more than mere coincidence. Until that moment, there had been no echo in the winding corridors.
"Beastgrave whispers to you."
The echo had an almost gloating quality about it. Kyra was reminded of a young fox she had seen toying with a vole it had caught. It was a far from pleasant comparison. Ishia added another problem to Kyra's worries. She raised her amber arm, the viscous limb changing shape ever so slightly.
"If I am in part with the mountain, what will happen to me when we leave?"
Kyra was afraid to give an answer. She was afraid that she already knew.
"We will do what can be done for you, Ishia," she said.
The branch wraith could imagine the scene that would unfold. The Sylvaneth would have to leave her behind.
"I understand," Ishia said. "But I can still help to save the Thornwild, even if I can never walk under its trees again. I can still save our home." "I will not leave you,"
Nias told her. Ishia frowned, and a sigh rustled through her branches.
"Yes, you will. Do you think I want any of you to be lost as well?"
She turned back to Kyra.
"You have felt what the call of the mountain is like. How long do you think it can really be resisted? How long before you become too tired to fight it anymore? Eventually, whoever I am will be worn away. I will be something else,
something I do not want any of you to become."
There was earnestness in Ishia's voice. Kyra could not refute the dire prediction the Dryad made. Beastgrave would wear them down, given time. In the forest, she had experienced some hint of what that would mean. Because she could not contradict Ishia's warning, Kyra could only make a grim promise to her.
"We will not leave you to wander the mountain alone."
Ishia's essence swelled with a vibrancy she knew to be gratitude. The other dryads looked away.
"The rootcutter's trail is clear,"
Nyas said, waving her hand at the floor.
"Let us hurry and run him to ground. Then all that we have sacrificed will not have been in vain."
With many turns and diversions, the trail left by Groth and his followers wound its way down the passageways. For what must have been hours, Nyas pursued their tracks, always wary lest the twist flesh were nearer than she expected them to be. Some other prints showed in the dirt, but none were newer than those of the beastkin. At least, not until the trail went past an ugly-looking side tunnel. Nyas stopped as she neared the dark opening. Her long fingers pointed at the dirt, tracing the tracks she had been following in the air. She glanced back at the side tunnel and hurriedly rejoined the other Sylvaneth.
"Something else has come into this passage," Nyas reported to Kyra. "They came out of that tunnel and into this one. I cannot tell how many they might be, but certainly there are more than three."
"What sort of prints are they?"
Yanir asked. Her bark was already thickening in anticipation of a fight.
"Strange ones," Nyas said. "They could be the tracks of mice, but hundreds of times larger. There are marks where tails were dragged across the floor."
"Do you think they are following Groth?" Kyra asked. "Or did they just happen into the tunnel?"
"I cannot tell," Nyas confessed. "Whatever they are, they might be hunting the twist flesh."
"We will have to assume so,"
Kyra decided. It was better to be cautious than to make wishful assumptions. She went forward with Nyas and examined the side tunnel. It was different from the passageway with the plinths, somehow rougher in its construction. It also looked much more recent. None of the Sylvaneth could offer any idea as to who or what might have gouged such a burrow. Neither could they tell how far it might descend into the mountain.
"The twist flesh did not go this way."
Kyra moved from the side tunnel and looked ahead along the main passage.
"Ishia, keep an eye on the path behind us, in case anything comes out of there and takes up our trail."
The Sylvaneth pressed on. They had not gone far before Ishia hissed a warning to her companions.
"I hear something scurrying behind us."
Yanir moved back to join the young dryad.
"Whatever it is, it isn't going to be happy when it catches up."
She stretched her hands out, her fingers tightening into talons of thorn.
"Keep watch ahead of us,"
Kyra told Nyas. The branch wraith moved back too, in case the others needed her magic to help them against their pursuers. The furtive scurrying sounds grew steadily louder. A few excited squeaks rang out. And from around the last bend in the passage, the Sylvaneth saw several furry creatures bounding towards them. Crook-backed, their bodies covered in brown fur and long, naked tails dragging behind them, the things bore a general resemblance to the wood rats that prowled the Thornwild. These were hideously enlarged, however, bigger than foxes, and with ghastly fangs jutting from their mouths. The vermin hugged the walls, keeping close enough for their wiry whiskers to maintain contact. As the giant rats moved closer, Ishia flung her amber arm towards them. The limb projected outward several feet, and the fingers closed around one of the animals. The vermin squealed as smoke boiled off it. The rest of the rats chittered angrily and came swarming onwards. Ishia released the first animal and seized another, but half a dozen more avoided her and rushed towards the Sylvaneth. Yanir swept her claws across them as they leapt at her. Two were thrown back, their bodies raked by the rending talons. Others sprang at the dryads, their chisel-like fangs gnawing into their bark. One darted between the dryads to launch itself at Kyra. Kyra hit the leaping rat with her hand, batting it back down the passageway. She sent an invigorating rush of arcane energy surging through Yanir and Ashir. The rats gnawing upon them were shocked by the influx. Squeaking in pain, they dropped to the floor and hurriedly retreated. Yanir looked down at her leg and pulled a gnawed strip of bark free.
"That was not so bad," she stated.
The retreating rats turned around the corner. Their frightened squeaks were soon lost, drowned out by a loud and vengeful chittering. Kyra looked at Yanir.
"You should not have said that."
The Sylvaneth backed away as the sounds grew louder and more intense. From around the bend, a great brown mass of rodents flooded towards them, beady eyes glittering with malice. Where before there had been only a handful of rats, now they were confronted by scores, even hundreds of the vermin.
"Too many to fight here," Kyra told her companions.
Having seen the way the giant rats had bitten into the dryads, she had no illusions about how long they could stand against an entire horde of the creatures.
"Run!"
she ordered the other Sylvaneth. While the dryads hurried past her, Kyra raised her hand and evoked a flash of fey light. The dazzling brilliance blinded the swarm, and a bedlam of anger and confusion sounded from the rats. Kyra knew it would only be a temporary measure. She turned and joined the others in retreat. Behind them, the din of scurrying feet announced that the rats were back on the move. When they sounded too close, Kyra turned and blinded them with another flare of light. The vermin were faster than the Sylvaneth. The chase would come down to a matter of which gave out first, her magic or their ravening persistence.
"The tunnel opens out ahead,"
Nias shouted. The dryad led the way into a larger chamber. Kyra sent a final flash of light to blind the rat horde and ran. She hoped they would find some kind of advantage once they were out of the passageway. The advantage, they found, was one that benefited the rats. The passageway opened out into a wide chamber with a high ceiling. It was a confluence of several tunnels that opened into the cavern from an assortment of heights and directions. Many of the corridors were alive with vermin, far more than the horde that had chased after the Sylvaneth. Kyra realized that the rodents had driven them into an ambush. A deeper squeaking drew Kyra's attention to a passageway across the chamber. Standing among the giant rats was a grotesque creature. It reminded her in some ways of the twist flesh, but this was a merging of human and rat. The thing wore a smock-like garment over its hunched body, and a metal helmet covered its elongated head. The ratkin's hands gripped a long whip, and when its red eyes turned towards the branch wraith, it cracked the lash in the air. The swarms of rodents surged out into the central chamber, chittering angrily. Kyra raised her arms and conjured a flash of light greater than those she had used in the tunnel. The vermin squealed against the stinging glow, but the continued cracking of the whip made it clear to her that their monstrous overlord was not going to let them slink back into the tunnels.
"They are all around us," Nias shouted to Kyra. "They are blocking all the passages."
Kyra gestured up at the higher tunnels.
"Not all of them," she told the dryads. "Climb!"
The Sylvaneth ran to the wall, crushing blinded vermin under their feet. They sank their thorny claws into the rock, forcing handholds as they climbed. Each of them had rats climbing up to their bodies, gnawing at their bark. As they ascended, rodents would drop away, often with a sliver of wood clenched in their fangs. Blood sap seeped from the bites and dripped down onto the horde. Kyra paused in her climb and glanced down. The floor of the cavern was a seething carpet of rats. The animals were crushing each other as they tried to reach the wall and pursue the Sylvaneth. The sheer press of vermin was creating a pyramid against the wall, rising higher and higher with each passing moment. As she watched, the ratkin cracked its lash and squeaked at the horde, goading the animals to frenzied effort. Kyra ignored the rats gnawing at her wooden body to focus her concentration on the creature. She pointed her finger at the ratkin, and a sliver of wood went shooting across the chamber at it. Her concentration faltered at the last moment. Instead of the missile skewering the whipmaster's heart, it struck the ratkin's shoulder. The creature yelped and leapt into the air. Before Kyra could try to target the creature with another spell, it had scrambled back into the shelter of a tunnel.
"It was worth a try,"
Yanir consoled Kyra. Despite the rats clinging to her own body, the old dryad had dropped back to swat vermin off the branch wraith.
"Maybe it will buy us the time we need," Kyra said.
Without the whipmaster, the rats below seemed less frantic than they had been. Then her attention was drawn back towards the tunnel the ratkin had ducked into. A huge shadow loomed there now. A massive brute squeezed its bulk through the opening. It was a gigantic beast with a naked, muscular torso and long, powerful arms. The thing's head was that of a colossal rat with fangs as long as daggers. The claws that tipped its huge paws were as big as swords. The monster stared stupidly around the chamber, indifferent to the swarming rats or the Sylvaneth, at least until the injured whipmaster appeared beside it. The ratkin pointed its whip up at Kyra and squeaked angrily. Kyra did not need to know the ratkin's shrill language to understand what it had told the huge monster. The indifference faded from its dull gaze, replaced by a raw fury. The creature stormed across the chamber, smashing dozens of rats under its feet.
"Don't be foolish,"
Yanir scolded Kyra when she pointed her hand towards the charging brute. The dryad pulled at her, impelling her upwards. Kyra submitted to her direction. Any spell she threw at the rat beast would have to fell it instantly. There would be no time for a second chance. Nias and Ishia were above them, standing at the mouth of a tunnel and plucking rats from their bodies. Kyra saw desperation in their faces. A moment later, a thudding impact shook through the wall. She glanced over her shoulder and saw the rat beast climbing up after them.
"Look out!"
Ishia cried. She moved to the edge and thrust her amber arm at the rat beast. The elongated limb struck the monster in one of its hands. The thing howled in pain as smoke boiled from the burning flesh. It dropped back to the cavern floor, smashing scores of rats under its bulk. Kyra and Yanir hurried upwards. They had not quite reached the top when they felt the wall shake again and knew the rat beast was climbing after them again.
"This way,"
Nias said as she started off down the tunnel. Kyra plucked the last rat out of her branches and ran after the dryad. As she followed Nias, the temperature grew noticeably warmer. There was a glow at the far end of the passageway, a dull red light that offset the gloom. Kyra heard the rat beast pursuing them into the tunnel. Other squeaks and squeals told her at least some of the giant vermin were with the monster. Whatever was ahead of them, whatever was causing the red light and the savage heat, she knew it could be no worse than what was behind them. Nias came up short at the far end of the tunnel. She turned and shouted back to the other Sylvaneth.
"We're trapped! There's nowhere to go!"
Kyra and the other dryads joined Nias. A gigantic cavern lay before them, molten magma glowing along one of its walls. There were dozens of tunnels and passageways at every side, some of them joined by stone bridges and archways, but not this tunnel. Ahead was nothing but a yawning pit. Behind them, the tunnel echoed with the hungry clamour of vermin.
"Over the side,"
Kyra told the dryads. The rock walls of the pit were of the same character as those in the nexus where the rats had ambushed them. The Sylvaneth could sink their claws into them, use their toe roots to find support. If they could ascend before, certainly they could descend here. If they could just reach one of the other tunnels, they might yet cheat the vermin. The weird river of magma was flowing upwards, but as Kyra swung out over the ledge,
there was a spray of molten rock as one of the loamy bubbles on its surface burst. Fiery flecks spattered across the chimney, scorching the stone wherever they lighted. One of the embers seared into her body, scorching through the bark and deep into the wood beneath. Only a desperate investment of magical energy was able to quench the flame as it threatened to set her entire body alight. Kyra's essence screamed in agony as she did her best to minimize the damage. Should she submit even as much as a moment to the torment, it would be too much. She would lose her grip and plummet from the wall. There was no need to warn the dryads of the peril. Each of them felt Kyra's pain pulse back into their own spirits. To linger in the tunnel was not an option. The rat beast and the lesser vermin would overwhelm them if they remained where they were. Better the comparatively quick and clean death offered by the abyss and the magma spray than to be gnawed to splinters by rats. "We descend to the next passageway," Kyra shouted. The branch wraith kept her concentration divided between the climb and mitigating the damage done to her by the ember. The effort made it difficult to climb down. Nias and Yanir soon passed her, while Ishia desperately resumed her role as rearguard, hanging back so that Kyra would be at less risk. "It is no good," Nias cried out. Kyra stopped and looked down. The tunnel she had chosen for them to make their escape was choked with giant rats. The Whipmaster was there as well. The ratkin glared back at her and gnashed its fangs. It was simple enough to see the creature's scheme. The ratkin intended to catch the Sylvaneth between two hordes of vermin. Dirt and pebbles pelted down on Kyra's head. She glanced back up to see the rat beast stabbing its claws into the rock so it could follow them down. Ishia struck at it with her amber arm, but the burning touch only enraged the monster even more. Another bubble burst on the magma flow. None of the fiery spray hit the Sylvaneth, but it came near enough that Kyra knew their reprieve was only temporary.
"The big one is herding us to the others," Yanir growled.
"Circle around the chimney," Kyra said. It was a command given in utter desperation. Circling the chimney would expose them to the falling embers for much longer. It was likely all of them would be burned off the walls before they could circle over to another tunnel, but climbing down to the swarms of rats was certain destruction for them. The dryad started to climb sideways, when still another hazard presented itself. Kyra saw something pale and sleek go streaking up from below. She had only a fleeting glimpse of it, but when her gaze strayed down in the direction from which it had come, she saw that it was not alone. A cave or tunnel several hundred yards lower in the chimney and on the opposite side of the abyss had three more sinister creatures standing on its ledge. They were slender in build, with white skins and lean limbs. The legs were scaly and clawed like those of an eagle, but they had man-like arms and visages that could only be described as something of the elves. One of the creatures threw itself into the abyss. At once, great black pinions snapped out from the being's back, lifting it upwards on bat-like wings. The flying creature darted up towards Kyra, its powerful claws striking so close to her that they drew sparks from the wall beside her head. That beautiful elf-like face pulled back in a monstrous snarl, displaying rows of needle-like fangs. It spun away and climbed higher up the chimney.
"Harpies!"
Kyra called out to the dryads, applying to the horrible flies a name she had known only from her mystical learning.
"Guard yourselves!"
How she would defend herself against the harpies was more than Kyra could say. It was difficult enough trying to keep the embers' fire from burning through her. She could not divert even a morsel of her magic to driving them away, and it took all her strength to keep her hold on the rock. When she spotted another harpy rising, she knew there was nothing she could do to stop it from attacking her. The harpy did indeed come screaming upwards, the fearsome talons on its feet splayed to their widest extent. Before it could slam into her, A stream of golden, semi-liquid struck the creature. Its shrieks altered from anger to agony as a pale arm and a black wing boiled in the acidic grip of Ishia. The amber fingers loosed their hold after only a moment, and the mangled harpy went plummeting into the abyss. Ishia's intervention was not bought without consequence. By diverting her attention to helping Kyra, the young dryad faltered in her race with the rat beast. The delay imposed by smiting the harpy let the descending monster close the gap between them. Retaining its hold on the rock with one claw, the rat beast swung the other at Ishia. Its enormous talons ripped into her wooden body, cracking through the bark and splitting open her trunk.
No!
Kyra screamed as Ishia lost her grasp and went hurtling down into the depths. She was given no opportunity to mourn the loss of Ishia. Flush with its opportunistic victory, the rat beast squealed in excitement and descended even more swiftly towards Kyra. At the same time, the Ratkin Whipmaster was compelling scores of vermin to climb up the chimney to get at the Sylvaneth. Many lost their hold and went tumbling off into the darkness, but dozens more maintained their grip. Soon a brown, seething mass was surging up towards them. The rat beast was near enough that it took a swipe at Kyra. The brute's heavy claws drew sparks from the rock just above her head. A feral snarl rumbled from its massive chest. It shifted its body to position itself better and raised its arm for another strike. At that instant, a winged harpy dived down. Kyra did not know if the flying enemy was intent on her still, but if it was, the rat beast got in the way. As the hulking beast started to swing its arm at her, the harpy's talons tore into its flesh. A sharp, keening squeal rose from the rat beast as the talons ripped into it. Black blood gushed from the wound, spraying down on Kyra. The harpy tried to pull away, but as it did, the huge vermin instinctively struck at the winged monster, struck at it with the clawed hand that had been gripping the wall. The clumsy swing missed the harpy, but it doomed the creature. The rat beast's grip on the wall was broken, its feet unable to maintain any kind of hold. It pitched outwards into the abyss. The harpy, its talons still embedded in the vermin's arm, was unable to fly free and hurtled into the darkness with its victim. The bat-like wings desperately beat at the air as the two went plummeting to their destruction. The falling harpy screamed as it plunged down the chimney. The cries alerted the rest of the flock.